Vanguard Radio for the precious 8%.
I believe that your primitive cerebrum kept trying to wake up.
Deep in the belly of the Quah. This is Jeff Beck. I'm your host for
The Truth Is No Defense.
Welcome to the broadcast. This is the 23rd edition of The Truth Is No Defense. We have a special broadcast tonight. Alex from Germany is in the studio, and we'll be surveying all things German, culture, politics, music, and even the Third Reich. This is not so much an interview as a conversation, and I'm sure Alex will have comments and questions of his own. Unlike in past decades, we tonight are able to speak directly, without a filter placed between Germans and Americans. Our foes, those who would divide and cause conflict between Germans and Americans, have exploited language and cultural distinctiveness between the English-speaking world and Germany. Our foes, particularly those in the media and government, have repeatedly deceived us about each other's intentions. We, tonight, are smashing through this curtain of deception. Welcome to the broadcast, Alex.
Hello, Jeff. Thank you for being on your broadcast, and I also like to greet everyone else who is listening and all the lurkers on the VNN forum and, of course, all the activists in the United States.
Yes, that's how I noticed you, Alex, and started chatting with you about your posts in the forum, some political and propaganda from Germany that put in there, what's happening there, and found it most informative. You know, Americans generally don't understand much of continental Europe. We know some about Britain because of the language, but we don't know about countries in Europe. And I'm so excited to have you on tonight. Let's go on. In regards to the music we opened the show with tonight, what is the name of that band and what's that song's message?
Well, the band is called Faustrecht. It is a German oi band. One could call it a skinhead band. And its song is named to Deutscher Sozialismus, which translates to German socialism. It's about giving an alternative to capitalism in Germany. That's the essence of a song. And Faustrecht is in one kind important because it is one of the few German skin bands, I would say, which predominantly uses these social issues in their songs, in their song text.
Is it a popular band today?
In the NS movement, yes. Within the frame of the NS movement, yes, it's a very popular band.
Well, some of the music we'll be playing tonight is available. We'll put it on the forum and allow people to download it. And considering the legal restrictions on certain forms of political dialogue in Germany, is music one outlet for thought and feelings which is difficult for authorities to stop?
Part yes, part no. The German state has a ministerium. It's called the Ministry for Protection of the Constitution, which focuses on the enemies of the German Constitution, namely German neo-Nazis and German communists. And part of this ministry is focusing alone on this, on the songs which should be illegal in Germany. They take all the new songs, which are all the new bands in Germany, and check their songs. And if they find something which is, let's say, is not approved by the German Constitution, then the band and the song will be deemed illegal within 6 months, at most.
Mm.
The problem for this ministry is that German bands and German songs are so many. The number is so great that they lack in time to check it everything up, and sometimes it takes very, very long for the ministry to find a song and to deem it illegal.
I imagine within the, I guess we can say, the nationalist community, which I assume you belong to, there's a lot of music that just circulates among people. Under the table, kind of underground.
Yes.
And so, I think the state might have a difficulty finding that music even.
Yes, of course. This is how the albums of the German band Lanzer did distribute among the scene. They didn't have an official label to distribute their albums because all of their albums were would not be approved by the German Constitution, so mm-hmm. they kind of distributed all the songs and other albums in the Down of the Table type, with distributors within the movement and contacts within the movement, so you could get the music.
You know, one of the reasons I think it will be very difficult impossible for the German authorities to stop it, because, you know, like with BNN and this show, I do this show because I love the show, and I want my people to wake up, and I want them to live and to continue living. And, no law is going to stop me and this show and BNN and or whatever from producing music or audio. This will be done. If they have those laws here in the United States, we will continue to broadcast somehow. We will not be shut down.
It will be in the like Germany. If you broadcast mainstream, you have to tone down the message, of course.
Mm-hmm.
You don't do have to be explicitly racist or anti-Semitic. But as long as you do it underground, there's no borders. Can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, on this sort of downbeat subject here, can you guess, Alex, how many Germans have been found guilty of violating these laws regulating speech or interpreting history differently than the official version as defined by the post-war German state?
Mm-hmm. I can only guess, and it must be around. It must be in the hundreds.
Mm.
But I can only guess. I have no
sure
number.
Yeah, I doubt those numbers are public.
I guess it's in the hundreds.
Well, even you know, scarier is Germans that traveled to the United States acquire citizenship, in fact, like Ernst Zundel and Gamal Rudolph. These men are being deported out of the United States back to Germany so they can face the legal system there. And, you know, these are men that are speaking in the United States and, you know, using the rights provided by the United States Constitution. And the U.S. government is working, in this case, with the post-war German government to prosecute Germans expressing their legal rights here in the United States. And this is very shocking. We all have to face that, and it is true. We have to understand what we're facing today. And it's a tough road, but we must travel it. In 2004, former German Chancellor Helmut Schmidt said this to a reporter. He said, quote, "The problems resulting from the influx of mostly Turkish Gastarbeiter or guest workers had been neglected in Germany and the rest of Europe. These problems could only be overcome by authoritarian governments." Were these words published in Germany? And if so, were they widely commented on in the German media?
Yes, this interview of Helmut Schmidt and the comments of Helmut Schmidt did get publicized in Germany. It did create a small uproar, mainly between the center-left and the center-right. One accused the other of not trying hard enough to integrating these foreigners. So the discussion remade the frames of this system.
And of course, integrating...
The left said it was mainly the blame of the conservative parties. That they did not try to integrate the Turkish Gastarbeiters in the 60s and 70s. The conservatives, on the other side, blamed the left that the left did not try to force the Turks to integrate into German society. So it's kind of no argument. It remains within the system.
What party was Helmut Schmidt from?
From the Social Democrats.
I see.
Center-left. It would be Democrats in the United States.
And as you said, none of these two parties, these two political factions, none of them have the idea of German for Germany. I mean, Germans
Absolutely not. No.
Man. Well, that's the case here too, and it's what we face. Well, let's take a short break for another song. Okay. Now, speaking of the political realities in Germany today, Let's start with the regional differences in Germany. I think we need to understand this as Americans, that Germany is probably not that different from the United States. There's different regions and different dialects and the way people look at things. And let's start with this this anthem, this German anthem that many of us have encountered, Deutschland über alles. And I think maybe this kind of reflects these splits in the German demographics. Many Americans have understood this song through the media as sort of a call for Germany to conquer its neighbors. But in fact, isn't this song really about the different German nation groups within the nation combining as one, like one identity, one German nation? Is that the case, Alex?
Yes, it's 100% correct.
Mm-hmm.
It's 100% correct. This song was written back in a time when Germany as an entity didn't exist. It was mm-hmm. a song when Germany was about many smaller states. And this song is about, this anthem is about unifying the German states into a German nation.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, you are 100% correct.
It is really a shame what has happened here, of course, and how Germany is explained to the English-speaking world, because when that song has been explained as a sort of militaristic expansionist song, and really it's about unifying the German country. And
yes.
And I think that gives our listeners tonight an understanding of the difficulty we have of communicating when we have a filter between Germany and the United States.
Yes, yes. It's exactly how you said it. It's just a song for the unification of Germany
mm-hmm.
into a German nation.
Well, on this subject of unification, during my university years, I spoke with a German lady. And as listeners know, Germany was divided again after World War II into the Eastern or communist state of East Germany, and then I guess we could use the term Western or democratic state of West Germany. And this lady I spoke with, this German lady, she mentioned to me that she opposed unification of Eastern and Western Germany after the fall of communism in 1989. And I might ask, why might some Germans be opposed to unification?
This is a very important question, because this is a very important and hot German issue. There are both sides to it. There are West Germans who are against the unification of Germany, and then there are East Germans who long for the days when the walls were still standing. I think we have to look at it from each perspective alone for the at the beginning. But first to some basics. The German state, the German economy, even in the 70s, started falling down. And the unemployment rate began to rise steadily. But the German state was very wealthy, the West German state, and it could subsidize those unemployed by giving government work. Now, with the unification of Germany, West German state had to take over all these millions of East Germans, had to feed them, had to give them work, etc. Now, I remembered it. Now, Helmut Kohl said in the 90s, at the beginning of the 90s, said to the West Germans that they should give this money they used formerly to subsidize their unemployment, to give this money to the East Germans, so to build up the practically destroyed economy, with the hope that the East German economy would flourish, and with it, on the other hand, would backfire on the West German economy and would rise again. But this idea didn't come, didn't work out. East German economy stayed at the disastrous point it was. Unemployment wasn't beaten, unemployment did rise. And now the West German state not only had the problem of high unemployment in East Germany, but it no longer could subsidize the unemployment in West Germany. So that is the reason why many West Germans blame the unification for the problems.
Oh.
Now there is also the perspective of the East Germans. The East Germans were lured into this unification by the West German capitalism with the promises of steady work and of wealth. This promise didn't come into reality. East German unemployment did rise again, and East Germans lost much of their beliefs in the West German capitalism. To make things worse, in the East Germany of until 1991, when the communism formally did die out, had a thing called social net, which means that not only materially but also spiritually, East Germans helped each other. A fine example is when a neighbor needed some salt, you could give it to him, or when he had some bananas more, they would share it with you. But this is the material thing. The social thing is also that the people cared for each other. When, mm-hmm. for example, an older German lost his wife, then the neighborhood became the extended family. The neighborhood cared for him and didn't let him fall. So there was always this social net keeping somebody from being very poor and very lonely. Since our communism did fall and West German capitalism came to East Germany, this social net started disappearing because mm-hmm. of capitalism brings with it individualism and egoism, and this social net just disappeared. And now mm-hmm. many East Germans are not only unemployed, but they also don't have this social net they had to keep them alive. So there are many East Germans saying, back when the wall was still standing, things were pretty much better for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, I think a lot of what American white nationalists in particular, I think, is different from, is like the East German case, is that we want, if I can use the term, a Volkisch society. You know, we want a society over here where whites, I think many white nationalists, we want one where whites are seen as brothers of each other and family members of each other. And, you know, we're not just some sort of economic unit, we come together and build a culture together.
Yes, and East Germany had this very social net. It had solidarity among its members. Mm-hmm. People cared for each other. These things disappeared. And not only that, but West Germany and capitalism couldn't bring work to the people, so they stayed unemployed, they became dirt poor, and they lost the social net which was caring for them before the wall went down.
You know, Alex, what I also read in the American financial press about Germany is that one of the promises that I remember about unification of Germany was that these large German companies, these capitalist enterprises, would move their factories to Eastern Germany. But in fact, I've read that they're moving these factories to the eastern parts of Europe or somewhere in the third world, that they're not moving these plants to Eastern Germany, but they're moving them to other countries and sometimes even non-European countries.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. It's globalization. Most industrial work disappeared, or it's not gone. It's not totally gone, but it started going off to China and to Eastern Europe, to Poland, to Czechoslovakia, to those Eastern European countries. And the German industry, which moved to East Germany, moved its factories to the very, very eastern parts of East Germany. Mm-hmm. So Polish workers could cross the border, work 8 hours a day or whatever it is, and at the end of the working day, they moved back to Poland.
Oh, yes.
So they only crossed the border to work in the German factory. German workers didn't profit from it at all.
We have this, I have some respect for the Poles, as I'm sure you do, but we have this problem in the United States where the American big business companies, they move just to the other side of the border in Mexico, and they set up all their factories just over the border, and then ship the products back here.
Capitalism follows the big, and big profits are where cheap labor markets are. And cheap labor is in countries where unemployment is high and
it breaks down our borders. Yeah, this process breaks down our nations.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
It's very well. One other comment on this I would like to say is that anyone who's understood German history knows that Germans have in many ways led the world in engineering. And they have produced some of the world's best engineers and industrial technicians. And this goes way back into the 19th century, particularly during Bismarck's era. Germany really led the way in a lot of development of chemicals in particular, but other technology. And I read an article in Business Week, that is an American publication, that claimed that Germany can't produce engineers anymore. And that Germany can't produce enough engineers. And, you know, they tell us the same thing here. They tell us that Americans can't, make these things. They can't produce engineers. And I think this is the biggest bunch of lies I've ever heard in my life. And
It's an utter lie. It's an utter lie. Big business is speaking through when it says such things, because big business needs big profits. It is true Germany has low birth rates, which means that the number of German engineers will be fewer and fewer in the coming years. But this doesn't mean that German industry will start making red numbers. They will still make profits, but they won't make the big profits they are doing now or the even bigger profits they would like to do in the future. And that's why it's not a lie. It's not a lie.
Before moving on to the discussion of the Third Reich, let's play another short clip from Faustreich.
Oberstes Gesetz ist die Erhaltung der Nation. Wir werden die sittliche Staatsidee in Deutschland aufrichten, zur Rettung der Nation und zur Sicherung des Lebensrechts aller schaffenden deutschen Menschen, aller Arbeiter, des Hoffes und der Haus.
Well, let's talk about Germany in a different time. And this is the time of the Third Reich. I believe that's called the Nazi Zeit in German. Is that right?
Nazi Zeit? Yes, you can call it the Nazi Zeit, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk, let's avoid the whole question of World War II. And let's talk about, I think, a more interesting period. And this is the period between 1933 and 1939. And this is a time when National Socialist domestic concerns and policies really had a chance to work in Germany. And a few of the programs I remember reading about were the Strength Through Joy. It was Dirche. How do you say that in German? Dirche?
Kraft durch Freude.
Yeah, I think so. That's right.
Program, yes.
And then, of course, you know, we had the famous case of the Volkswagen cars and the Autobahn, and these were just a few of the National Socialist projects that manifested in this time. But I think focusing on of interest to American white nationalists and perhaps all English-speaking white nationalists, we have an interest in this period that goes beyond the uniforms and the rallies common to this time in the National Socialist era. And I think I would like to focus on one aspect of this time that I think is the deeper meaning of National Socialism in Germany. And I think it's best summarized by an American professor. Many listeners will know he's Kevin MacDonald. And he writes, quote, "The National Socialist movement in Germany from 1933 to 45 is a departure from Western tendencies towards universalism and individualism into the direction of racial nationalism and cohesive collectivism." Do you think, Alex, that this assessment by Mr. MacDonald is accurate?
Partly yes, because this is the view of the middle class. But the backbone of the NSDAP and particularly of the stormtroopers of the SA were the working class and the unemployed Germans of the, of the period. And it's important to see what they believed National Socialism was and why they did promote it and why they did fight for it. I think it goes to the period before the First World War. We must see it that way, that the exploitation of the white worker throughout the 19th century and in the 20th century by the plutocrats was extremely heavy. And people, even before the First World War, did look for alternatives to this capitalist system. And many German workers did decide that communism was not German. This is important. They didn't say that they didn't agree with communism because they didn't agree with state property and etc., etc. They didn't agree with communism because it was Russian or Jewish, because it was foreign to them. But they did agree with the alternative to capitalist system, and they saw National Socialism as an alternative to capitalism. This is, I think, the most important point.
Is this point that you mentioned, and I think it's a point that a lot of Americans aren't familiar with, is this something that Germans, as a broad spectrum of German, today's Germany, do they understand National Socialism in this way?
They start to see it again in this way. The problem was because communist propaganda and after the war leftist propaganda always deemed National Socialism as being the lucky dog of capitalism, of protecting big business. But this is an utter lie. And I think in the last years people are rethinking, because many things have happened in Germany, and they see what kind of attitude German nationalists have on particular economic themes, and they rethink the whole National Socialist idea. So I think yes, it goes pretty well.
Is it possible for speaking broadly of Germany in general, is it possible for a German to come to an honest understanding, what I will call an honest understanding about this era? Is it possible for them to get the facts and to study this era and the people involved in the National Socialist movement at that time?
If he wants to, yes. If he wants to, but most people who are interested in it are either the young or those who have become unemployed, who don't see, or working class people who fear to lose their job. All these people who are dissatisfied with today's world.
Yes. You know, here in the United States, we don't have these laws that prevent us from saying things, but the way they get us here is to deprive people of jobs and to make them social outcasts. It's a different mechanism. And, you know, the thing that I particularly despise about, we have a television channel here in the United States called the Discovery Channel. It's supposedly a history channel, and all they do is just run Hitler videos day and night, and they make him out to be like the devil, and people just eat this up day and night, and they can't get enough of it. And what I particularly despise is this very simplistic idea of National Socialist Germany. It's much more complex than this. There are reasons not to like National Socialist Germany, and there are reasons to like National Socialist Germany. It's a complex experience, and the way that it's presented in the United States, it's a very simple thing. It's just bad, and it's awful, and that's it. And that's all you need to know.
The mass media in Germany doesn't represent National Socialism any different. It's the same thing here also. But I think the high unemployment here in Germany makes many people think beyond this propagandistic mass media.
Mm-hmm. But Germans don't know about the social programs in Germany in the 30s that rescued Germany from a depression. Do they know about these things?
Yes, they know about these things, but one must keep in mind that capitalist West Germany, at least, mm-hmm. after the war, did create a system called soziale Marktwirtschaft, which translates to social markets. Liberal capitalism in West Germany had an external enemy. It was communism. Mm-hmm. And it could not exploit its workers to the fullest because it was afraid that these workers would look to the east for an alternative to the system. So they created this social market, which did redistribute some of the wealth to the lower classes, and thereby leveling working class Germans up, so they won't be angry about the system, and they keep being consumers.
But now that East Germany is gone and communism is gone, yes. The big business can do as they want.
Exactly. That is the great point. Now that the external enemy has gone, big business lets its mask fell off. And now we see the true mask of liberal capitalism. Now we see all these neoliberals and neoconservatives who try to destroy social markets and try to force us into very rude capitalist forms where exploitation is again at its highest since the 19th century.
Well, Alex, we've been talking about a lot of very serious things tonight, and I hope you're not getting tired, are you, Alex?
No.
Okay. Well, let's move ahead 60 years since the end of the National Socialist regime.
Good.
And I'd like to talk about politics in Germany today, contemporary politics. Let me first begin with a discussion of politics in the United States. And here in the U.S., we have a two-party monopoly on politics, and we have basically both parties are working for the same goals or objectives. And in the United States, this means open borders, world empire, and as I see it, and protection and propagation of global capitalist policies and institutions.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
politics here, at least how a thinking person sees them, is a bit like a football game in which both teams are pushing the ball in the same direction. Is this also the case in Germany?
Yes, we have two major parties in Germany, the Social Democrats on the one side and the Conservatives on the other side. Of course, in German democracy, you need more than 50% of the votes so to be able to build a government. Of course, no party ever gets 50% or over 50% of the votes. So usually, it was all the years before that was the case, the Social Democrats did build an alliance with the Green Party and formed the center-left bloc, and the conservatives built an alliance with the libertarians and formed a center-right bloc. So, yes, it's kind of the same, the center-left bloc and the center-right bloc. They are both capitalists in this sense. Only I think if you look at it generally, there is only one difference. The center-right bloc wants to dismantle the social market of Germany faster than the center-left bloc. The center-left bloc says, stop, not so quick. They want to use, let's say, it like the frog in the boiling water, or in the water to boil, you boil it slowly. They dismantle the social, the center-left does the same thing, it only does it slower.
Well, let's talk about an event in particular, and this is something that I think some Americans will be aware of. And this is the election in Germany in 2005 of Angela Merkel. She defeated Gerhard Schroeder. And as I watched this election, and again, I'm watching it through the controlled U.S. media, and it became apparent to me that the controlled U.S. media did not like Gerhard Schroeder and wanted Mrs. Merkel elected. And I think there were two important reasons for this, and I'd like your comment to see if I'm on track. Gerhard Schroeder opposed some, in my opinion, opposed some of the globalist economic policies favored by Washington. And perhaps more importantly, he defied Washington, the U.S. government, by leading European opposition to the Iraq War. Do you think these observations are correct?
These observations are 100% correct, but I think we have to give it a little bit basics before answering it. The problem, I said it before, is that we have many similarities with the society of the 20th century, with the beginning of the 20th century, even before the First World War. We have liberal capitalism as the only rule of the westernized world. It has no external enemies, and it can let off its fake mask and show its real face to everybody. We have exploitation of the working masses. Again, the same thing as in the early 20th century. And this is something which people in generally in Germany understand. I think they understand that. And that's why many did not get lured by the promises of the center-right bloc, who promised them castles in the sky by saying that by dismantling the social market model, they would beat unemployment. This is an utter lie. And this is one of the reasons why they voted for the left. This is why they voted for the left. The other reason is, of course, the German policy in Iraq. Yes, very important. Mm-hmm. Germans don't want to be in Iraq or anywhere else in the Middle East. They want to be left alone.
Yeah, they don't want, the Germans don't want to be part of the American world empire, do they?
No. The German people know, politicians, yes.
I see.
They are, we must see German politics differently from what the German people want. Even though we live in a democracy, the German politicians don't represent the opinion of the German people.
Well, if I may comment, I think Angela Merkel seems very, 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 very friendly to the U.S.
Yes.
You know, and when I say the U.S., I'm not talking about people like me or just the average American. I mean the U.S. government and the evil people. I think they're just plain evil that are running this government here. She seems to be very friendly to them. I don't know.
Yes, it's absolutely correct. It's absolutely correct. But the opposition of the people to war is so big that even Angela Merkel cannot make an alliance or promises to the United States government that Germany will send troops to anywhere in the Middle East. That's impossible now.
Mm-hmm. That's good news. I'm very happy.
That's the good news. Yes.
And the last question I'd like to talk to you tonight, and it's about the nationalist right in Germany. And you sent me a video, and I think if it's not copyrighted, I'll put that available on the forum for download, because it's a very nice video, and it's from a show called Aspect, and I think that's the English word, and it features many interviews with Germans, and it has to do about focuses on the NPD, which is a German nationalist party. And
yes, correct.
I'd like to play a short audio clip from that, and we'll roll the tape, and then perhaps you could comment about this video and who are the people in it and what are they talking about.
Wir haben also bei uns im Ort eine eigene Krabbelgruppe, wo halt nur Nationale drin sind mit ihren Kindern, wo man sich einmal in der Woche trifft. Man hat da eigene Räumlichkeiten und ist eigentlich schon irgendwo wichtig, weil es halt auch gerade für die Kinder so ist. Man sieht ja Beispiel Rüttli-Schule, wie sowas ist, wenn dann halt ein deutsches Kind dann alleine ist mit vielen Ausländern. Und wir wollen das eigentlich schon vermeiden und versuchen von Anfang an einen Freundeskreis aufzubauen, der dann schon in die Richtung National geht.
Generationenvertrag rechts außen. Aus Neonazis wurden Familienväter und so setzt die NPD auf die Aufzucht einer eigenen nationalen Gegenkultur.
Hier kann man durch unsere Jugendarbeit, durch die Kinderarbeit, kann man bereits Einfluss nehmen auf die Entwicklung von Heranwachsenden und sie letztlich diesen Multikulti-Fanatikern entreißen, hin zu einer völkisch orientierten Lebenseinstellung.
Kleine Germanen mit völkisch orientierter Lebenseinstellung. Wie werden sie Deutschland verändern, wenn sie einmal größer sind?
Okay, Alex, what are your comments?
Well, I just sent an example for you in this video, because German media reports about the movement every day or at least once in a week. And this was just one example. In this program called Aspect, German media reports some of the things happening in the German movement when German nationalists who became 30 or above 30 started a family and are now trying to move together to build small Nazi communities. They are moving in the same town. They are relocating to have better social network, so to speak, and to have control over the schools. Because if in the class of about 30 pupils, you have 4 students who have nationalist parents, then those parents will be a power in the teacher parents association. Those parents will force the school to adopt policies which are in our interests. And the media was complaining in this video, so to speak, about this idea of Nazis building small Nazi communities among Germany.
There is a very foul-looking man, very ugly-looking man in this video. We had a little joke about this. If I can give this video away, the listeners have got to see this man. He's what we would call an anti-racist activist here in the United States, and his teeth are just rotten out, rotted, and his. He looks like he weighs 30 pounds or something. He's very very pathetic, ugly creature. But the video is very good, and I enjoyed seeing a video where all the people in it were white, and you know, all the people looked healthy, And yes. Here in America, you cannot believe what's going on over here. The acceleration of the non-white invasion and the racial mixing in the United States is just like a fire. It's just like it's burning everything. And it gave me, despite Mr. Oze, I think that's how you pronounce his name, despite Mr. Oza, he was a very unattractive, very ugly man. The film is very nice, and I hope that the viewers on BNN can view this. You know, one quick question about how to pronounce words in German, and this name, maybe you know this gentleman, Julius Streicher. The CH in his name, the name Streicher, is it K or is it Ch?
It's pronounced Streicher.
Streicher. Okay. Yeah, I've heard that the CH pronounced in many different ways in the past, and so now we have the proper pronunciation.
Just an small input on the video.
Okay.
It's about two social events. One in Bavaria, where the local NPD gathered parents and their children for a small social event. More than 1,000 people came. And the, and the second event was in Mecklenburg-Vorpommern, where an election will come in September, where a few hundreds came also to this NPD-made social event.
Well, that's good, because the video is in Germany, and the more our listeners know about this, I think the more they'll enjoy it.
German media makes very interesting reportages and documentaries about the movement. It's a pity that they are only in German. It
will
be very interesting even to the Anglo-Saxon world, I must guess.
You know, I make it a goal of mine to read European media. And even though the media there is let's just say controlled to some degree, the quality of reporting and the quality of broadcasts is very high there, and the way they present subjects, whether it's Germany and even to some degree in the United Kingdom, and in France to some degree, from what I can understand, is very high. And it Americans don't realize the poor quality of news and entertainment we have here in this country. It is the absolute lowest quality, and until you see the quality of I've seen Deutsche Welle, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yes, and right. I've watched that on satellite, and you know, I don't always understand what's being said, but the quality and the way they present media to people, they present it so that the person viewing, I think they assume the person viewing is intelligent and who is able to think, and you know, here it's all like baby food. It's so low. It's so childish. And
very sad. That's very sad. Yes.
And we have a lot of we have a lot of good European genetics still in this country, and it is very sad. And you know, despite the low IQ, in my opinion, the low IQ third world people that are flooding in here, there's still a lot of good white genetics here from Europe. And but if you don't develop the mind, if you don't train the mind, you know, you might as well be an ape from Africa, because you know, what good is it, right? Well, anyway, enough of my speech.
I think one. Okay.
But anyway, Alex, you are speaking to tonight to at least several hundred. Or if not 1,000, on a good broadcast, there'll be 1,000 downloads of this show, unique downloads. And I'd like to open up this conversation to you, And if there's anything you would like to talk to American and other, maybe Australian and English, white nationalists, Canadian, you cannot believe how bad things are in Canada. I'd like to give you the opportunity to speak directly to them and you know, tell them anything you'd like to say.
Thank you. I don't know what to tell them really, but I think people in the United States and in the UK must understand that the white front line has moved from South Africa to the United States and the United Kingdom. And if this front line falls, it will have disastrous effects in the white homeland, which is continent Europe. The social problems which existed in the pre-World War I Germany and Europe and white world exist today, start to exist today indeed again, because liberal capitalism has no external enemies and it starts to exploit the working masses again. And out of this frustration came the socialist movement. And of course, all over the white world, and of course with the disastrous effects of the First World War, it's further put gasoline on the already burning fire, which was the frustration of the working masses, which led to the acquirement of power of socialist movements in some European countries, like communism in Russia or national socialism in Germany. But the fire of frustration was already burning before the First World War. And the same problems we have today, again, capitalism exploits the working masses and the masses are frustrating. They are frustrated and they look for alternatives. And this is a great chance of National Socialism to present itself to the masses as the only alternative to capitalism. That's all I want to say, and keep fighting, keep fighting. There's no other way around it.
Indeed, there is no alternative, and as we explored with the party systems here in the United States and in Germany, and I think one can also say the UK, there is no political options here. You vote for the same people no matter what team they are on. And I think whatever happens in the United States and in Germany, it will have to be national socialistic in character, because that is really the only option. And we do not want to continue living under the same system we have now. It's unbearable. Well, let's close tonight's broadcast with a song from Frank Reneke. It's Rote Jugend, and I hope you all enjoy this song as much as I do. And is there any comments you'd like to make about the song, Alex?
It's a very good song by Frank Reneke. It's called Rote Jugend, which translates to Red Youth. Frank Reneke here addresses the Red Youth and calls them to ask us to associate with us and to join us with because we share many, many ideas. We are anti-capitalistic, we are a very green movement, we are environmentalists, and really, Frank Reneke addresses the Red Youth and calls them to join forces with us to fight against the system.
Yeah, one last, gosh, there's so much to talk about, but you know, one last point that is a very important point. American white nationalists have to reach out to the left. And because there are people on the left in this country that can respond to our message, and I think that's such a good point. And we'll listen tonight to Mr. Reneke, and thank you very much, sir, for coming on, and keep up your great posts on the forum.
Thank you very much.
Mit bösen Gesichtern, die Fäuste geballt, schreit ihr immer die gleichen Parolen. Ihr seid noch so jung, doch die Taktik ist bald, soll der Bruderkrieg sich wiederholen. Wir rufen,
hey,
ihr seid die Roten, kommt in Scharen.
Hey,
seht doch endlich die Gefahr.
Hey,
lasst euch nicht länger mehr verkohlen.
Hey,
denkt doch endlich einmal klar. Man hat euch die Lügen und Phrasen gelehrt, nur damit ihr die Wahrheit nicht findet. Dadurch wird der Weg in die Freiheit verwehrt und der Zwiespalt im Volke begründet. Wir rufen,
hey,
ihr seid die Roten, kommt in Scharen.
Hey,
seht doch endlich die Gefahr.
Hey,
lasst euch nicht länger mehr verkohlen.
Hey,
denkt doch endlich einmal klar. Es schreppen Konzerne, es herrschen die Banken, es sterben die Völker der Welt. Wir kämpfen dagegen, wir wollen nicht erkranken, auch wenn es euch nicht gefällt. Wir rufen,
hey,
ihr seid die Roten, kommt in Scharen.
Hey,
seht doch endlich die Gefahr.
Hey,
lasst euch nicht länger mehr verkohlen.
Hey,
denkt doch endlich einmal klar. Wenn ihr die geschichtliche Wahrheit erkennt, dass der Deutsche den Krieg nicht verschuldet. Wenn man euch die wirklichen Kriegstreiber nennt, deren Terror der Deutsche erduldet. Wir rufen,
hey,
ihr seid die Roten, kommt in Scharen.
Hey,
seht doch endlich die Gefahr.
Hey,
lasst euch nicht länger mehr verkohlen.
Hey,
denkt doch endlich einmal klar. Und dass wir wie ihr gegen Ausbeutung sind und Atomenergie selbst verdammen. Dann stolpert auch ihr in die Zukunft nicht blind und dann kämpfen wir Deutschen zusammen. Wir rufen,
hey, ho, wir sind die Deutschen, kommen in Scharen. Hey, ho, und wir sehen die Gefahr. Hey, ho, wir lassen uns nicht mehr verkohlen. Hey, ho, und wir denken wieder klar. Hey, ho, wir sind die Deutschen, kommen in Scharen. Hey, ho, und wir sehen die Gefahr. Hey, ho, wir lassen uns nicht mehr verkohlen. Hey, ho, und wir denken wieder klar. Hey, ho, wir sind die Deutschen, kommen in Scharen. Hey, ho, und wir sehen die Gefahr. Hey, ho, wir lassen uns nicht mehr verkohlen. Hey, ho, und wir denken wieder klar. Hey, ho, wir sind die Deutschen, kommen in Scharen.
Vanguard Radio, waking you up.